Nonverbal communication. How many of you in your place of work or somewhere along the way in college have had a talk or a demonstration or an explanation of nonverbal communication? Why do you suppose that was?
It's pretty important.
In fact, people that are supposedly in the know about this stuff claim that 70% of what we tell somebody else is nonverbal. So if you're trying to explain something to somebody or trying to talk to them about something, nonverbal communication is pretty important because 70% of what you have to say is going to be conveyed that way. God actually talks a little bit about nonverbal communication. Psalm chapter 55. Oh, I hate doing that. Psalm 55. They're not chapters, they're songs. We wouldn't... leave it alone. Psalm 55, verse 21. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. He was saying one thing, thinking another. I'm guessing that his nonverbal communication showed that. We can go to the New Testament in Philemon, verse 6. We're told that the sharing of your faith may become effective by the acknowledgement of every good thing which is in you in Christ Jesus. That your sharing of your faith can be done because there is an understanding, an acknowledgement, a recognition of the good things of Jesus that are in you. Not just by what you say, but by what you don't say. No matter how good of a Christianity we talk, we will never convince anyone unless we communicate the same message by how we live. We just won't. Christianity is a show-and-tell religion. How many people remember show-and-tell in school, right? You're always anxious to get to go. And get to have something to show and tell. How embarrassing was it if you didn't have anything to show, you just had to stand up there and tell? That wasn't much fun. And it wasn't as fun for the people that were listening either. But Christianity is a show and tell religion. And when those two things, what you show and what you tell, when those two things conflict, people are going to ignore what we have to say and believe what we're showing. They're going to ignore what we say and believe what we show. For example, do we talk about rejoicing and then complain about everything? Do we teach about humility and then get angry when things don't go our way? Do we quote about loving our enemies and then talk about how unfair somebody's treating us and how we're going to get them back? See, that's a difference, isn't it? If we show one thing and tell another. John chapter 13 and verse 15, Jesus said, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you." What had Jesus just done? Washed the apostles' feet. He'd washed their feet. And he didn't tell them, "Okay, here's what you need to do. You need to get in the habit of serving other people." He didn't do that. He told them, but he emphasized it with something that he showed them. I imagine that the apostles remembered the Son of God kneeling before them and scrubbing their feet a whole lot more than they remembered the words that he said during that time. They probably remembered the example more. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, we're told, "Having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they observe, glorify God on the day of visitation." Yeah, okay, they know I'm a Christian, but what do they see in me? What works do they see in me? So that by those works, they can glorify God. That's what's going to get their attention. Psychologists claim there are at least 10,000 nonverbal symbols that we use in our daily communication. 10,000 different ways that we tell people what we're thinking without saying a word. Now, some are obvious, right? What's that mean? My car's broke. I need a ride, right? How about? Yep. How many of you, have, as a parent, have ever used or as a kid have ever seen? Right? Nonverbal communications. We use them all the time. Some are, we might not think about as much. Now, I'm going to say this, and I see some of you sitting that way, and I know that's not meant to be that way. Sometimes, just like our words, it can be two different things, right? Depending on context. And I know some of you are cold right now. But as a rule, if you are listening to somebody or talking to somebody and they are standing there like this, what does that mean? They're either frustrated with what you're saying, they disagree with what you're saying, or they're not listening. Something's wrong, right? If you are seated across from somebody and you're having a conversation, non-verbally, if your knees are away from them, that is an unintentional mental signifier that you don't really care. You're not paying attention. But if your knees are toward them, that does exactly the opposite. It lets them know, I am paying attention to you. What about if you're having, I know you've all done this, you're having a conversation with somebody and they're looking you straight in the eye, right? Versus you're having a conversation with somebody and about every four or five words they do this. What does that tell you? Something else is interesting. Yeah, they're not paying attention. I have several times been having a conversation with somebody and they're doing that, and it might be, I don't know, maybe this is rude too, I don't know. But I'll be looking, I'll go, and they'll look at me like, what? And I'll go, well, I thought maybe something was going on that I was missing out. I only do that if I'm trying to make a point. But we have to be careful, right? About the nonverbal communication, the nonverbal signals that we use. And we have to understand how this affects our communication with other people. Especially as we are a representative of Christ, right? It's going to affect when I'm talking to somebody else about God or about the Bible, it's going to influence the way they receive me. If I'm maybe listening to a brother or sister that's having a problem or is telling me something exciting that's happened in their life, it's going to affect the way that they view that message and receiving it. What about if I'm having a Bible study with somebody? If I'm sitting there having a Bible study with somebody, and I've had this happen to me, I'm explaining my point of view, and I see them do this. And I know immediately that they're shutting me out for some reason. If I know that, what's going to happen if they're explaining to me their viewpoint on a passage or subject, and I do this? I've just communicated to them that I really don't care what you have to say. If I don't care what they have to say, then why should they care what I have to say? It's very important. We have to remember these things. So we have to learn how to let nonverbal communication work for us when we're talking to people. You know, sometimes words can do a lot of things, but sometimes no words can convey what is meant by a hug, right? Or even a handshake. Just focusing on them when they're having a problem and listening to their concern. When Jesus heard about his friend Lazarus that had died, that was sick first, he said something that the apostles should have picked up on and they didn't. When they found out that he had died, Jesus said again information that they should have picked up on. When he got to the area and talked to Mary and talked to Martha, he told them things. They didn't pick up on them. You know what people picked up on, and we tend to pick up on the same thing? Jesus wept. We remember his tears for his friend. It's amazing, amazing, amazing. In 1 Peter chapter 3, and I know this is written specifically to women, but us men can take a lesson from this too. In chapter 3, starting with verse 1 of 1 Peter, Peter tells the women, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word," that's nonverbal, right? "Without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear." We all can take a lesson from that. That the people around us, even those the closest to us, are paying attention to our nonverbal cues. And a lot of times they're more important, 70% to 30% more important than the words that come out of our mouth. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 18, John says, "My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in word and in truth." So he adds the idea of truth in there. And we talked about that a little bit this morning in our adult class. Obeying in word and in truth. Right? James chapter 1, verse 22, we're told, "Be doers of the word and not hearers only." To be active, not passive. Can you think of examples? I'm going to throw this out there. Can you think of examples from the New Testament of people that loved not just in word, but also in action? That they let their actions speak. The Good Samaritan, great example. Yeah, he had no idea who he was. It wasn't like he was a friend or somebody he'd been working on to convert. Just a stranger that he helped. I think somebody else said one. Dorcas. When Paul showed up, it wasn't about the lesson she'd preached or the Bible study she'd held. They held up the garments that she'd made. Can you think of any others? Cornelius. I'm sorry?
He was known for his alms and
deeds. Good, very good. He was known for his alms and his deeds. Yeah. Yep, he opened his home to anybody that would come in and listen to what Peter had to say. You know, one of the ones I thought of, I only wrote one down because I wasn't planning on asking you that. That was just sort of a spur of the moment. Let's have some fun and help you stay awake. The one I thought about, you remember Paul and Silas were in jail in Philippi. And while they were in jail, what happened? There was an earthquake. Now, what were they doing before the earthquake? Singing praises to God and praying to God. Oh, yes, they were beaten soundly, very soundly, by the Roman keeper of the prison, or at least somebody under his care. And remember, a lot of times when we think of somebody being beaten, we think of 39 lashes because it couldn't go over 40, so it was 40 save one. That was the Jewish law. What was the Roman law for when they were beating somebody? What was their limit?
Couldn't kill them.
That was it. As long as they were breathing and alive when they walked away from the beating, you did fine. You didn't go too far. So Paul and Silas were probably in pretty bad shape. And there they are, singing and praying to God out loud. Everybody hears them. There's an earthquake. Nobody leaves. Who was listening to what they were doing? The jailer. He also noticed that nobody left. Actions. But then after that, what did the jailer do? He took them home and then washed their stripes. Now, we don't know. It could have been that he was the one that beat them. That's a very distinct possibility. At the very least, he oversaw it. Now just think about that. His actions were speaking louder than his words. I don't know. It's not recorded that he said, "I'm sorry. I regret that I did that." But his actions sure showed it. These were escaped, convicted convicts. And here he is washing their stripes. Remember, he even encouraged them to leave. But they chose to go back. They didn't want to get him in trouble. No matter how well we preach or talk about the benefits of Christianity, it is just a lovely theory until the world can see it in practice in our life. That's all it is. It's just another philosophy of living. It's no better than Buddhism or Taoism or anything else. Unless it's put into practice in our lives and the world can be convicted by both the things we say and the things we do. Turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, I know you're familiar with this passage. Let's start with verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory with all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. And He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on His left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." I just want you to think about that. These are nonverbal communications. These are ways that these people, they didn't just talk about what they should do. They actually went out and did it. Sometimes I fear that if this was written about us, it would say, "I was hungry, and you formed a humanities club and discussed my state and situation. I was imprisoned, and you crept off quietly to your basement and prayed for my release. I was naked, and within your mind, you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt to God and thanked Him for your health. I was lonely, and you left me alone to pray for me. See, that's what He says to the other people, isn't it? I was hungry, you didn't give me any food. I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink. We have to be careful. Their judgment in this passage is based on what they did. Well, Doug, that's just a parable. That's not real life. Well, let's go to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20, starting with verse 11. John writes this. He says, "Then I saw on a great white throne..." "Then I saw a great white throne and Him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to what? Their works, by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it. Death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them. And they were judged each one according to his works. That's real life. That's what's actually going to happen. We are going to be judged based on our works. Are we ready for that? Are we ready to stand before God Almighty and give an account of the things we've done? And remember the people that Jesus talked about, the things that were done for. The imprisoned, the poor, the naked, the hungry, the thirsty. That's a little bit scary. God expects us to do. It's not good enough just to tell. Do we need to tell? Absolutely. Absolutely we need to tell. I find it interesting that throughout the book of Acts, there is a phrase that's used over and over and over and over again. Making disciples. You ever thought about that? Making disciples. That's an action verb. That's about what you do. Making disciples. Then it says, teaching them to observe the things that I've commanded you. I want us all to think about that, and I encourage you to go out and make disciples. Let them see Christ in your life, that they may, perhaps without a word, be convicted of the goodness that is in you, of Christ, that they can acknowledge the presence of Christ in you and in me. Christianity is a show and tell religion. And our nonverbal communication speaks tremendously louder than the words we say. If you are ready to become a disciple of Christ, if it is time for you to become a follower of His, He requires action. He requires words. I repent. I confess. I believe. But it also requires action. That you are baptized. If you're ready to take that action so that you too can have this hope of Christ, then we invite you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.